I do want to give a title today. My title is Seven Alarming Prophecies for Christians. I did have the word most alarming, but I wanted to be maybe soften the title a little bit. But Seven Alarming Prophecies for Christians. I'm not going to spend any detail on this, but by way of introduction, just want to review general end time, a general outline of the end time. Of course, we've got a time of sorrows, and we'll go to Matthew 24 here in a minute. And then there's this, a place of safety that, of course, we all hope to go to. Abomination of desolation is kind of a trigger event that lets us know that the tribulation has begun. Certainly, there'll be other conditions that help us to see that. Then you've got 2.5 years of the Great Tribulation, and then a final year, a 1 year day of the Lord. And of course, Christ's return and then the kingdom. So, most, if you think of all the prophecies, the worst or the scariest, the most worrisome prophecies are about the Great Tribulation and or the day of the Lord. If we quantified all the prophecies in the Bible and, the death, destruction, one-third of mankind, and then a third of that remaining third, and so forth. If we looked at all those prophecies, the majority of those are about the Great Tribulation. So then I've got a question then. What are the most difficult or unexpected, concerning or alarming prophecies for Christians? I mean, if we're a true Christian, we're a true believer, in one sense, those prophecies about the Great Tribulation, about the Day of the Lord, well, hopefully we're in a place of safety. Again, they're still troubling. Of course, we still pray for mankind. We still realize with compassion the devastation, the fear that the world will go through. But what would be the most concerning, the most alarming prophecies for Christians between now and the place of safety? What would be the things that we should be most fearful about? Well, today I'm going to answer that question, and I kind of warm up again with another type of a question. Which is harder to be on guard against, to watch, or to be on top of your game, to be ready, to have faith, to have love, to have compassion, if faced with obvious prophetic events or the status quo? Which is easier? If there was, somebody dragging people out of this church building and beating them outside in the parking lot, I mean, it'd be a little easier. We'd all be praying, we'd be fasting, we'd be reading, we'd be studying. If there were great, powerful, just fearful events happening all around us, that would be a great motivator. But most of those things will happen after Christians, hopefully, were in a place of safety. So, the peace, the apparent safety, the status quo, the typical day-to-day can be a Christian's most alarming prophetic event. And we'll see that as we go through here. This is not something I've, just pulled out of thin air. There are seven I started to study and went through all the signs that I could find between now and a place of safety. If we start just with the time of sorrows that we could be in, that we're certainly see those signs now. Mr. Vernich gave us information, and Andy as well, about the conditions that we're in. So today, let's start at Matthew 24. And we'll use Matthew 24 as a kind of a platform, if you will, for virtually all of these other scriptures that we'll turn to. And by all accounts, Matthew 24 would be the most important prophecy or outline of prophecy contained in the Bible. Of course, given by Jesus Christ himself. Very important. And it's also parallel accounts in Luke 21, Mark 13. But we're going to use Matthew 24 as a primary starting point or overview of the end time. I'm not going to spend a great deal of detail. If we go through, and we won't go verse by verse, but the first part, the first verses 1 through 7, just gives us a general conditions. And we won't read these verses. I'm just going to pull little phrases out. Many will come in my name, will deceive many, hear of wars and rumors of wars. Nation will rise against nation, famines, pestilences, earthquakes in various places. Those things we find in the first seven verses of Matthew 24. And, you know, the argument can be made, you know, with obviously proof. You know, those things are going on, but they've also gone on in effect in some degree for all of mankind. You know, there's been pestilences, there's been disease, there's been wars, rumors of wars. So, you know, it's a soft introduction Christ gives us in that sense. It's general. It's not a date. It's not a when you see this specific event like the abomination of desolation. It's a general condition, but by all means, those things are occurring. You know, we in America here often forget, you know, God sees the earth from his perspective. You know, does he see death and pestilence, disease, famine, wars in a different way than we do? You know, we can forget, you know, just what, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, you know, 200,000 people died in Haiti. You know, 3 years prior to that, 270,000 people died in the, you know, the Indonesian Pacific Rim with, you know, a tsunami. You know, just the death, the wars that go on. You know, God sees those differently than we do because that doesn't affect us at the moment. But certainly those conditions are occurring. But again, I'm not going to spend detail on that. And verse 8 has an important phrase. It says, all these are the beginning of sorrows. And that's why when I gave just by way of introduction, you know, this time of sorrows is a good period of time as far as putting it in those words. It's the time of sorrows prior to effectively a place of safety. So from verse 8 on, it's kind of a change in the timeline. Verse 9 through verse 14, again, I'm not going to read all this. Actually, I will read these verses. But when you read these verses, ask yourself this question. Is verse 9 through verse 14, is it a general review? Is it prior to the Great Tribulation? Or do these events occur in the Great Tribulation? Let me begin reading in verse 9. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Verse 10, and then many will be offended, will betray one another, will hate one another. Then many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. Verse 12, and because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. You can see verse 9 through verse 14 is not, I mean, there are some general descriptions there. You know, this gospel of the kingdom will be preached. You know, that's something that's always gone on, will continue to go on. It will be, I believe, more powerfully done even during the Great Tribulation with the two witnesses, of course. But again, these events, you know, can we say that you know, they will deliver you up into tribulation and kill you? You know, that can happen, of course, at the end of a time of sorrows and at the beginning of the tribulation, because there will be God's people that live through the Great Tribulation. So even these verses don't give us a specific event or specific time frame, but we know that's true. It's going to happen. But there's a danger in our understanding, the way we read this. Again, verses 9 through verse 14, these events can happen quickly. And that's a very important point. These events can happen quickly. You know, often we may sit back and say, well, until I see Christians being drug out of church and killed, I'll just kind of cruise. You know, but these events can all happen very, very quickly. They don't have to go on for 20 years or 30 years or 10 years or 5 years. There's not given a time frame. You know, it doesn't say for 12 months or for 1 year. There's no verse that tells us how long these things will take place. And that's an important point. We don't want to read more into the verses than what's there. So if we ask the questions, you know, are professing Christians today hated? Well, of course they're hated. I mean, we're hated. Professing Christians, you know, the general Christian population on earth, which we can call them Christians. I mean, if they believe in the Bible, they believe in Jesus Christ, they believe in the teachings, they don't get it all. But are Christians hated? Well, certainly. Look at the school systems. Look at the things, the legislation that's passed. Christianity is not on the rise. It's on a decline because it is hated. Are Christians killed? Now, I did an interesting, it takes you 5 seconds to do, it's an interesting study. I typed in on a search engines, Christians killed, and guess what? The search engine help, the search assist, it comes up with a big list. And it, you know what it says? It says, in Egypt, in Iraq, in Nigeria, in India, in Turkey, in China, in Afghanistan. The search engine Assist comes up with that automatically. Are Christians being killed today, as we speak, all over earth? Well, they are. Now, we say, well, they're not us. They're not from our congregation. But do those people believe in Jesus Christ to the best of their ability? Many do. So, again, it's important. You know, Christ said those that are not against us, they're for us. And so these verses can be speaking to, in one sense, you know, general Christian belief on earth. Now, we also believe, again, I believe, and I know as a church we believe, these things will also happen to us, you know, us as God's true believers. It hasn't yet, fortunately. But again, it's important to understand that these conditions, A, can be going on, are going on as we speak, and will continue in the future, but also can happen very quickly. Is there deception going on now? Of course there is. You know, are there false prophets currently? Yes, there is. So again, these verses are general in nature. Certainly we see the events happening today. They will continue to happen. But a fearful thing for a Christian is that these events can happen so quickly that we don't have time to prepare, as Mr. Vernich said, and get our game in order, to get our lives in order. You know, Tim Franke gave a message recently about that, that there's a line drawn at some point and that door is shut. Well, if there's big events happening, we rush to prayer, we rush to study, we rush to fellowship. If there aren't big events happening, we wax cold. Or can wax cold. So, in Matthew 24, of course, the Great Tribulation is discussed starting in verse 15. And then the coming of the Son of Man, you know, verse 29. So Christ continues, I'm not even going to read any of that. He goes through this general outline. But then the most important message that Christ was trying to get across, we often overlook. It's the rest of the chapter. So Christ gives us this outline, but then he says, starting in verse 32, through the rest of the chapter, he gives us three critical lessons. And they're prophetic in nature. It's really these three lessons that are more important. The first key lesson is the parable of the fig tree. Verse 32, let's read. Now learn this parable. Basically saying, you know, you're not going to quite understand everything I've covered, but make sure you learn this. Get this point, Christ is saying. Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see all these things, know that it is near, at the doors. Verse 34, assuredly I say to you, this generation. So again, a time period there, a generation. You know, so a generation of people, when these events start to happen, it's not going to take 500 years to go through these. You know, generation is what, 70 years, 50 years, depends how you define it. But I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. So again, Christ is telling us, when you see these things happening, and we see every single one of these things happening, not to the intensity that they will get to, but they're happening. Then he goes on to give us a key lesson number two about the outline that he just gave, starting in verse 36, that no one knows the day or hour. We'll see later that we can know as God's people the season. We're not going to be clueless. We're going to know what's going on. But it's important. Christ brings out this lesson in verse 36. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. However, he goes on to give four examples. And again, this is something Christ, as we go through these verses and these other prophetic parables and prophecies, Christ has, and God have given us so much information about this principle that we're not going to know when it is, so you better be ready. It's going to be something that's sudden and unexpected. And that's important. If it weren't sudden and unexpected, it'd be easy, or easy, maybe too easy for developing character. If we saw big things happening, it was so obvious, we'd all do what we're supposed to do. But if things are subtle and under the undertone, it's much harder to keep focus and endure. Again, so Christ, verse 36, tells us nobody knows the day or hour. But then he goes on to say, effectively, however, in verse 37, He gives us four examples here. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. It's a prophetic or it's prophecy. He's saying, this is how my return will be. He's giving us a prophecy. It's a lesson. Verse 38. For as in the days before the flood, they, and he's referring to the world, not Noah here, were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark. Again, that's a scary prophecy for a Christian. A Christian who does not want to live through the Great Tribulation. It's going to be like it is now, eating, drinking, marrying, and giving in marriage. You know, we see, you know, the decline of the United States. Well, it's been declining for about 14 years. The dollar keeps going down. But we just kind of get accustomed to it. It's the old frog in the kettle trick. And that's the greatest fear. That's the prophecy as Christians we should most fear, is that we just get so accustomed to things going downward, you kind of settle in. Until the day that Noah entered the ark, it wasn't obvious a week before, 2 weeks before. The clouds didn't start to amass and lightning was striking like crazy. And people started to say, well, hey, that guy Noah over there, he might be onto something. And it kind of just sat there and rumbled for 3 or 4 weeks. Until the day Noah went in the ark, everything seemed okay. Continuing in verse 39, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away. So also will, again, prophecy, it's a promise. God is saying it's going to be just the same way. So also will the coming of the Son of Man be. So again, there's the first example. Christ is reinforcing. He just gave this outline of prophecy, but he gets very specific and says, this is exactly how it will be. So we're not going to get all of Matthew 24. Time. There's no dates. There's no time. Specific events that are mentioned. But these parables, these lessons, Christ spends a lot of time on here and in other places as we'll go through. So the second example that Christ gives is in verse 40. Then two will be in the field. Well, that's typical. Right? The point here is how it will happen, how it will come about. Two will be in the field, which means it's typical. People are out working. They're doing what they normally do. If it was something so traumatic going on, people wouldn't be out working. They'd be, you know, they'd be fearful. They'd be in their house. They'd be doing something and watching Fox or CNN. You know, I mean, it's just going to be like any other day. Verse 40, then two will be in the field. One will be taken suddenly. That's the implication. Again, people want to use this word taken as a verse to support rapture. But of course, it has nothing to do with that. It's one will be taken and the other left. So again, we got two in the field, very typical type of a day. A third example, verse 41, two will be grinding at the mill. That's typical. There's nothing out of the ordinary about that. People are making a living. They're out working, coming to and from work. One will be taken suddenly and the other left. Of course, verse 42 is the main point. Watch therefore, for you do not know the hour your Lord is coming. That's important. That is a prophetic parable, if you want to call it, or just a prophecy that Christians, God's true people, are not going to know the day and the hour. Again, we will know the seasons, the times. You know, we'll have that general sense, and we'll read the verses that tell us that. Then a fourth example Christ gives, verse 43. But know this, again, he's emphasizing what you can understand, what you do need to learn, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and would have not allowed his house to be broken into. Verse 44, again, he reemphasizes the main point he's trying to get. The main point Christ was giving, certainly the prophetic outline, but it's more important, these lessons, these key points that Christ gives about what he was saying. Verse 44, therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming, again, a prophecy, at an hour you do not expect. Not only is he coming, we don't know the hour. We won't even be expecting it. That's a scary prophecy if we're not ready. If you're ready, you don't have to worry. And that's the whole point of today's message. Mr. Vernich said it perfectly. You know, we need to get ourselves in order. So again, it's not just that we don't know the hour. It's simply come at a time we're simply not expecting it. A parallel account, if you want to turn here, is Mark 13, verse 32. And I will read this because it gives another example. Again, Christ has already given us all these examples. Noah, two in the field, two grinding, the thief. You know, he's giving us all these parables, these ideas to help us get the picture. We kind of read through it. Okay, yeah, it's not as exciting as the first part of the prophetic outline. I want to know everything about prophecy, about dates and times. But Christ is saying these four things you can really count on. And that's the point he's trying to get across. There's another one in a parallel account, Mark 13, verse 32. Mark 13, verse 32, another example is given. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. Verse 33, take heed, watch, and pray, for you do not know when the time is. It is like a man going to a far country who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to each his work. I thought that was interesting. He's given each of us a work to do in the meantime. The example that we set, the gospel that we preach, the light that we are, hopefully, to those around us. And commanded the doorkeeper to watch. Verse 35, watch therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming. You just don't know when he's going to return. So you always have to be ready. In the evening, at midnight, at the crowing of the rooster, or in the morning. Verse 36, lest coming suddenly. It's important, isn't it? There's two words, coming suddenly. It's not going to be something we can just kind of keep our thermometer as a Christian. Well, you know, things are starting to warm up. I better get serious. Things are starting to heat up a little bit. I better finally start doing what I know I should be doing. It's not that there's rockets shooting overhead. Why? I'm serious now. It's going to come suddenly. Lest coming suddenly he finds you sleeping. What I say to you, I say to all, watch. It's important. The principle of coming suddenly, that's why I read the outline, is these things in Matthew, when do they happen? We don't know when they happen. When are Christians going to be killed? Well, they're being killed now. When are some of us going to be killed? It might be 2 weeks before it's time to go to the place of safety. And if so, we can't wait till then to get ready. Let's turn back to Matthew 24, because there's a third lesson Christ continues with. Continue in verse 45 back in Matthew 24. Because Christ really emphasizes this in context of the outline that he gave. And this is, of course, about the faithful servant is found doing. He's taking action. Verse 45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Verse 46, blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. Verse 47, assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming. Again, another very, very important three words. Why would somebody be saying delaying his coming? Because it's going to seem like Christ is not returning. It can't be time yet. Because the events around us are so placid, they're calm, maybe they're peaceful even. So Christ, this must not be the right time. Otherwise, they wouldn't say he's delaying his coming. If they're dragging out Christians in the street and beating them and killing them and setting fire to church buildings and it was chaos everywhere, people wouldn't be saying, oh, he must be delaying his coming. They'd be fearful. They'd be respectful. They'd be in prayer. But the point, again, kind of in a roundabout way, people are able to say he's delaying his coming because of the events that they see. Because they're not in tune with God's word. Verse 49, again, delaying. Let me start back in 48. But if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, verse 49, and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that evil servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him and at an hour that he is not aware of. So again, if we're not an evil servant, if we're a good servant, we're going to understand the times. We won't know the day or the hour, the exact times, but we're going to get the flavor, the time frames, and be aware of those things. Verse 51, what will happen to the evil servant? And will cut him in two and appoint him with him his portion with the hypocrites. I also thought that was interesting, with the hypocrites. If we're kind of playing along with this Christian game, but not in it to win, basically says that's just a hypocrite. You're going to pay the price for it. Because I've given you, Christ has given us this knowledge. If we don't act on it, he throws us in the category just as a hypocrite. You're just pretending Christianity. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I'm sure there will be. So again, Matthew 24 is my first of seven kind of prophecies that Christ gives an outline, but then he gives us those three key lessons for which he gives us numerous examples that we don't know the day or the hour, so be ready, watch, pray. A second prophecy, this one will be much shorter, is what I just entitled Peace, Peace. That's, you can find that in two places. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 3, which we'll read later. I've got that under another point. But if you want, you can turn to Jeremiah 6, verse 13. It's actually found in two places in Jeremiah. Jeremiah 6, verse 13, and also Jeremiah 8, verse 11. Because from the least of them, even to the greatest of them, everyone is given to covetousness. And from the prophet even to the priest, everyone deals falsely. I mean, certainly it fits the bill for today's way of operating. Verse 14, they have also healed the hurt of my people slightly. They've kind of made us feel good about what's going on, saying peace, peace, when there is no peace. But again, the point is, if there was war going on, if there were nuclear bombs going off, not even a fool would cry peace, peace. They cry peace, peace when there is no peace. There's no undertone. There's undertone of violence. There's an undertone of war. But again, the idea that they can say peace, peace gives us the sense that it may not be obvious. Verse 15, were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? No, they were not ashamed at all. Nor did they know how to blush. Therefore, they shall fall among those who fall at the time I punish them. They shall be cast down, says the Lord. Let's move to a third prophecy that I'm calling, again, alarming for Christians who aren't ready. That's really what I should be saying. These prophecies are alarming for someone who's going to be, you know, not ready. He's going to look right over the events. The third one is thief in the night. And we've already, of course, read this, but there's so much more on this. I've listed it as a separate section. But thief in the night is my third prophecy. And it's found in multiple places, but if you would, turn to 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 1. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 1. Of course, we can tie this back to Matthew 24, verse 43 that we've already read. But 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 1. But concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes. Again, it's a future event. He's giving us, in essence, a prophecy or a prophetic lesson here. For the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. A thief in the night is not obvious. It's sudden and unexpected. A thief doesn't call you up and say, oh, by the way, 60 days from now at 8 o'clock, I'm going to come rob you. So get prepared. You've got the 60 days, get ready for me. I'll be wearing this. I'm 6'1", 200 pounds, light hair, age 34. Be ready for me. I mean, I know I'm making a mockery in one sense of that, but that's what, it's not going to be that way. It's very clear, as a thief in the night, it will be unexpected. It won't be obvious. Verse 3, for when they, again the world, say peace and safety. Again, there's that point that we've already made. Why do they say peace and safety? Because it may feel like peace and safety. Then what happens? Two very important words again. What happens? Verse 3. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction. If it were destruction that were happening, and we see it happening, and we see it coming, it's so obvious, It wouldn't be sudden. Sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. Now, I've never personally been pregnant, but I've seen movies and I've seen my own kids. You know, labor pains, how they come on. Oftentimes, it's quickly. Oh, you know, all of a sudden you get that labor pain. I hope that's right. Is that how it happens? It's not just a little flutter for 6 weeks, right? It's a sudden pain. I assume that God who created us knew exactly how labor pains come on, and that's what he's saying. It's sudden. Again, the message in here is not what the event is. It's not just giving us a date or a time. It's describing how it comes. Again, that's probably the biggest focus on what I'm saying today, is it comes quickly. If we're not ready, you simply can't get ready. It comes quickly. And let me just read that whole verse again, verse 3. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. And in verse 4, he gives us a contrast about us as God's called people, as God's chosen people. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. That's encouraging. So for those that are doing what they know they should be doing, it's not going to be a surprise. It's not going to come as a thief in the night. We will be ready. If you're ready. How many of us are ready? I can't answer that. You know, only you and God can answer that question. Verse 5, you are sons of the light and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk are drunk at night. Verse 8, but let us who are of the day be sober. And how are we to be sober? Putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and as a helmet, the hope of salvation. You've got to be doing something. You've got to put those things on. If you're coasting, you're not putting those things on. And these events, these times and things that happen will overtake us as a thief. They will come suddenly because we just weren't expecting it. Another passage that gives us more and reemphasizes the prophecy about thief in the night is found in 2 Peter 3, verse 10. 2 Peter 3, verse 10. Again, we're on my point three, or my third prophecy, being thief in the night. 2 Peter 3, verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come. Again, he's given us a prophecy. It hasn't happened yet. It's in the future. So this is, in effect, a prophecy. As a thief in the night. Which is what? Sudden and unexpected. In which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Verse 11. Therefore, you know, as a result of these things, what should we do? Since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness? Looking for and hastening, which means to urge on or eagerly await, rather than feeling like, well, God's delaying his coming. You know, things aren't so bad. It's going to be a long time. Let's just kind of cruise. It has to be just the opposite of that. We have to eagerly be awaiting Christ's return. Again, verse 12, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God, because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Verse 13, nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Again, Peter also brings out the point that if we're not on top of our game as a Christian, these things will come sudden and unexpectedly as a thief. That's a scary prophecy. It's a prophecy of the condition of Christians. If you're ready, don't worry about it. You don't need to know the date or the time because you're ready. If you're not ready, it's going to overtake you as a thief. It'll overtake me as a thief if I'm not ready. And that's a scary prophecy. And that's the most important lessons I think Christ gives about prophecy. He's worried about us being ready to be born as sons and daughters. He's not worried about the time frames and the events. They're going to happen. They're going to happen. But is our Christian development going to happen? That's Christ and God's biggest concern. It should be ours as well. Another passage about thief in the night And I found these interesting. Revelation 3, verse 2. Revelation 3, verse 2. Of course, this is to the church in Sardis, which, you know, we've always as a church believed that these church eras can be specific eras in time, but they also more likely are concurrent eras. These lessons apply to all of us at all times. Revelation 3, verse 2. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain that are ready to die, for I have not found your works perfect before God. Verse 3, remember, therefore, how you have received and heard, hold fast and repent. Therefore, if you will not watch, I will, again, he's giving us a promise, a prophetic promise, I will come upon you as a thief. That's a scary prophecy. If you're going to refuse to watch, to pay attention to world events, to study, to pray, to go to church, to be a light, to live God's way, I'm promising you that my time will come on you as a thief. That's scary. That is a scary promise, a prophecy from God. And you will not know the hour I will come upon you. That's as specific, as poignant as you can get. It's a promise from God himself. And it's also a prophecy for Christians. And it should be, as I've titled, you know, alarming prophecy. It shouldn't be alarming if you're ready. But if you're not ready, it will be alarming. In Revelation 16, verse 12, again, I just found this interesting, given the time frames that are being discussed in Revelation. Revelation 16, verse 12, we're still under the point of thief in the night. Revelation 16, verse 12. And think about this. This is the sixth bowl plague that's being discussed here in Revelation 16, verse 12. This is way into the Great Tribulation. This is actually obviously the Day of the Lord here occurring. Reading in verse 12. Then the sixth angel poured out his bowl on the great river Euphrates, and its water was dried up so that the way of the kings from the east might be prepared. You know, I believe that most, if not all, of prophecy in one sense, people have a way to explain away things. You know, well, it's just huge drought, it dries up the Euphrates. You know, people that aren't Christians are going to look, they're not going to read this and say, oh, well, see, it's happening. You know, most of things that happen, you know, heavenly signs, well, we know those asteroids were coming for the last 2 million years. Yeah, but could you time them in such a way as God can? Well, you know, people, scientists, you know, people, the non-believers, are going to have ways to justify or explain things that are in the Bible. Not everything, but many, many things. Dropping down to verse 15. Again, we're in context here of the sixth bowl plague. And this is what it says, verse 15. Behold, I am coming as a thief. Blessed is he who watches and keeps his garments white, is the implication, of course. Well, wait a minute. All these things have already happened. There's terrible, terrible things have happened. But still, the concept, the principle that he comes as a thief, sudden and unexpectedly, blessed is he who watches. Won't it be obvious by then? Or will there be a social way to justify or explain everything that's already happened up to this time? I mean, that's pure speculation. I mean, I'm just saying that it's here. It says right here, we'll come as a thief. You think by then, the sixth bowl plague, things are so obvious. There's no sneaking up on this. You know, we're reading the Bible. Boom, that just happened last week. Boom, this just happened. But it may not be that way. To a Christian, it will be. To the world and those who are not ready, watching, praying, studying, reading, it may just be, oh, that's just a bad drought over there in the Middle East. The Euphrates dried up. Well, that's no surprise because it didn't rain for 6 months or 9 months or 12 months. No kidding. That's not prophecy. That's just bad nature. I mean, that could be what's happening. But it's important that we see that the idea coming as a thief, and that only those who are watching will it not come as a thief. Let's move on to my prophecy number four. My prophecy number four is the phrase, as in the days of Noah and Lot. And again, this all starts from the platform of Matthew 24. We can actually reference Matthew 24, verse 37. I'm not going to read that again. But as in the days of Noah and Lot, that's a promise. It's a clue. It's a prophetic sign. It's prophecy. It's a parable. about the future. If you would, turn to Luke 17, verse 24. Luke 17, verse 24. Again, about the return of Christ. Luke 17, verse 24. For as the lightning that flashes out of one part under heaven shines to the other part under heaven, so also the Son of Man will be. Again, it's prophecy. Here's how Christ will return. Hasn't happened yet. It's prophecy. Verse 25, but first he must suffer many things and be rejected by this generation. That's already happened. He was rejected by mankind and is continuing to be rejected by every generation since. Verse 26, and as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be also. Again, it's a promise. It's a prophecy. If you want to know how it's going to be like in the future, just prior to Christ's return, we can look to the story of Noah. It's going to be just the same way. It says right there, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be also in the days of the Son of Man. Verse 27, they're all cowered because missiles are shooting over. There's plagues everywhere. Your neighbor's dropping dead with plagues and everything's chaos. Whoops, didn't say that. Verse 27, they ate, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage. And then the next three words, again, so scary. Until the day, the very day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. They were just living like any other day. It wasn't obvious. It wasn't that there's nuclear bombs going off down the street. It wasn't that the power grid was all in chaos and people were starving, scrambling around looking for something to eat. Again, those things are going to happen, you know, at some point. But we have to be careful that we don't use those things as a trigger to when we begin our Christian walk. Well, I'll make a checklist over here. When I see starvation, disease, pestilence, and that's happened to my neighbors or somebody in my family, then I'm going to dig in. Because it says right here, as in the days of Noah, they just didn't think, it was no big deal. Noah had been preaching that message for 100 years. Here's this crazy guy who's building an ark. We don't even have that to look to. If every person in your area, in every town had a crazy man building an ark, at least they'd say, well, that's kind of weird. It'd get their attention maybe a little bit. You know, we've got Christianity being preached, but people aren't responding to it. And as a result, the very day that the destruction comes, they just simply weren't expecting it. There weren't enough signs that were so strong, so powerful, that they got the point. And we can fall prey to that same condition. Verse 28, likewise, goes on and gives a second story. Again, Christ is emphasizing this so many times, so many examples. There's actually 12 that we'll end up reading, which we've already read many of them. Verse 28, likewise, saying, hey, I've already given you one story, but just so you get the point, I'm going to give you another one. Likewise, as it was also in the days of Lot, what was it? Chaos. There are bombs going off. The brimstone started to fall 6 weeks in advance to kind of give you a clue. Nope, didn't happen. They ate, they drank, they bought. What do you mean they bought? They're out doing business? I don't know about you, but if Nashville got blown up today, I'm quitting work. I'm going home early. I mean, these things aren't going on. They ate, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted. I'm not planting crops if I think they're all getting obliterated the next day or the next hour. I'm planting crops because everything's just like it was the day before. They built. I'm a builder. Building's hard work. I'm not starting a project. Oh, by the way, yeah, bombs are going off. I'll come dig that foundation for you or dig that footing for you. We're going to get this project. You know, things are going chaos everywhere. You just wouldn't do that. You would start a house, a building project, because you think things are just like they were the day before, the week before, the month before. There's stability. Verse 29, here's this key words again. But on the day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. The very day. That's not much of a notice. Will we have any more notice than one day? I don't know. Verse 30, even so will it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Even so will it be. That's not a guess or, you know, it's a promise. It's going to be just like that. So it will be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. That's prophecy. It's going to happen exactly this way. Continuing verse 31. In that day, he who's on the housetop, typical work. What do you mean on the housetop? He's up there roofing, putting shingles on. Maybe it's a flat rooftop in the Mediterranean. They're sunbathing. I don't know. He's on the rooftop. That's just typical. Nothing out of the ordinary. And his goods are in the house. Let him not come down to take them away. That's pretty sudden. You got on, you know, some work clothes. You're up there doing a roof repair. You're going to have to get up and go. That's how quick it's going to be. I can go down, pack your bags, go get your stuff, make reservations, brush your teeth, make sure you pack your overnight bag. The idea here is not when it happens, it's how this thing rolls out. The point that's being made is it's going to come quickly, and that's the point. Continuing, and likewise, the one who is in the field, again, it's typical. He's in the field doing what? Working, planting, sowing crops, pulling weeds, doing whatever. The one who is in the field, let him not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. Well, people say, well, that means don't look back. Well, no, it also means what happened to Lot's wife? An angel grabbed him and said, hurry, let's get out of here. This place is about to get obliterated. Run. Don't, you know, grabbed his hand and they ran out. You know, we forget that lesson about Lot's wife. It was hurry, get out of Dodge ASAP, like right now. Because it's about to be destroyed quickly, suddenly, unexpectedly, as a thief. Of course, another lesson is that Lot's wife did look back and to miss or long for what she was walking away from. Verse 33, whoever seeks to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life will preserve it. Verse 34, I tell you, in that night, that's what, 12 hours a night, there will be two in bed. Again, typical, people sleeping. The one will be taken. Like I mentioned the word taken earlier, but people want to use these verses as rapture, which has nothing to do with the subject here. But even so, the word taken there means to receive near, to assume an office, or to learn. I thought that was interesting. So being taken doesn't mean, bling, you know, all of a sudden you're up in heaven. I mean, that's what people want to use these verses to justify or to support rapture. But it means to receive near, to assume an office, or to learn. So one person will assume an office. They're going to learn, time to go. They're going to be drawn near to Christ, to God. The others will be left there. It doesn't mean that they're going to blink up into the heavens. It could mean that, I guess, if you know. But anyhow, that's a separate subject. Continuing in verse 35, two will be grinding together. Again, another example of how typical this time frame will be. One will be taken suddenly and the other left. And then another example, verse 36, two will be in the field, again, working, plowing, doing what they always do. The one will be taken and the other left. It's like the intention here, Christ and God said, look, give them dozens of examples because these folks aren't going to get it if I don't. It's like all these things, let's tell them how it's going to be. Don't worry about the dates and the times and the events that you need to see before you finally... Just tell them they're going to have to be ready and always be ready because it's going to come quickly. Why do it that way? Because that's how character is developed. It's harder to develop character and love and patience and endurance when times are status quo. If it was chaos, if we saw a tank driving down the street, gunning down people that were running down, it may be easy. Well, and we'd see the urgency. God wants us to be urgent every day of our lives. Let's go to my prophecy number five. Prophecy number five. I think Mr. Vernich or maybe Andy, I think somebody alluded to this and I'm forgetting. But my point number five, my prophecy number five, is that scoffers will say, where is his coming? Scoffers will say, where is his coming? And again, back in Matthew 24, we remember all the typical life scenarios that were going on, the ones we just read. It's just like every other day for the last week, month, year, decade. Nothing changes. That was a phrase that was also used this morning or this afternoon. It's just the way it's always been. Well, why would they say that? If they saw all these incredible prophetic events happening, they'd say, you're right, Christians. He's about to return. The point is, they don't see those events. We can find this in 2 Peter 3, verse 1, or beginning in 2 Peter 3, verse 1, about scoffers will say, where is his coming? 2 Peter 3, verse 1, beloved, I now write to you this second epistle, in both of which I stir up your pure minds by way of reminder. Verse 2, that you may be mindful of the words which were spoken before by the holy prophets and of the commandments of us, the apostles of the Lord and Savior. Basically saying the Old Testament, the New Testament, what we're writing to you, it all concurs. It's all telling us the same things. Verse 3, knowing this first, again, knowing this first, this is important, that scoffers will come in the last days. Again, will come in the last days. It's a prophecy. We look at it as a parable, but it's a prophetic parable. Scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lusts, and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. That's a scary prophecy for an unaware Christian. It's so obvious, or so unobvious, for everyone out there. It's just like it was. Yeah, conditions are bad, economy's up and down. Yeah, there's rumors of war, wars, disease, pestilence, earthquake. That's all the same stuff we've always had. Where's your Christ? You saying he's coming now? Dude, there's nothing different now than it was last year. It's always the same. It's always going to be the same. Ups and downs. Scoffers wouldn't say that if these events were so obvious, would they? Not even a fool. If a third of mankind's being blown up and there's disease wiping out millions or billions of people, and there's the sea turning to blood, and all these events are happening, it would be very obvious. They'd say, hey, Christians, we hate to admit it, but you were right. They won't say that. They're going to mock Christians because everything seems just the way it was from the beginning of time. Up and down, ebb and flow of mankind. Nothing's different. That's a scary prophecy. I would rather there be blinking lights in space and heavenly signs. Don't we want that? I'd rather have that. Shooting star that writes the words, you know, get ready, you know. I mean, we want those signs, but we're not going to get them unless we're on top of the game, on top of our Christian calling. We'll see the things. Why? Because we'll be reading God's word and we'll put the two together. If we're not on top of the game, the Christian calling, I said game, I don't mean to poke that, but if we're not on top of our game, we're not going to get it. It's going to be like a thief in the night. I did want to read here, the word continue, just for what it's worth, means to stay constant. Things are just the same they've always been. It's just constant. These prophecies that you Christians read, they're just constant. Those things always exist. Let's continue just to finish this, 2 Peter 3, picking up in verse 5. For this they willfully forget, and this is interesting because he ties this back into Noah, the story of Noah and the flood. Verse 5, for this they willfully forget. They choose to forget this little fact here, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of water and in the water, by which the world that then existed perished, being flooded with water. Yeah, all you scientists, geologists, all you people out there, they willfully forget, in all cultures really, if you can do a search on it, virtually every culture on earth has a history of the flood. I mean, it was passed down through Noah, through his descendants. Virtually every culture on earth believes that there was a flood. And that was promised, the flood's coming. And it's also promised that these future events are coming. But they're not going to, let's forget about the flood so we don't have to worry about the future. This willful forgetting that this flood thing really did happen. It really did happen. Why do we find, you know, skeletons and fossils in funny places? We can look at the geo layers. We know that these things really did happen. But let's forget about that because we also want to forget about the future that God promises is coming. They willfully forget. Why? Because it's more comfortable to forget these things. And do we do the same? Well, I believe that a flood happened, I'm sure, kind of. These things in the future, I'm sure they're going to happen, but I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait until I really see some proof, then I'll dig in. Just to finish, verse 7, but the heavens and the earth, which are now preserved by the same word, that the same word that brought the flood, are reserved for fire until the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. The same word that brought the flood is going to bring these future events. And we can count on it. The sixth prophecy that can be alarming for Christians, the sixth prophecy, moving on, is the parable of the wise and foolish virgins, which I think also was mentioned today. Again, my sixth prophecy is the parable of the wise and foolish virgins. That's found in Matthew 25. Matthew 25, verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened. Again, it's a prophetic parable. The kingdom of heaven, which is not here yet, will be like this. We can learn what the kingdom will be like. We can learn how it will come in this parable. The kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now, 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Interesting, Mr. Armstrong had that 50% thought and comment often. Verse 3, those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels and their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, interesting, it's going to feel like a delay. They all slumbered and slept, but they weren't all unprepared. There's a difference. All slumbered and slept can tell us, again, unexpected, in the night, as a thief in the night. We're not looking for it on a day that you do not expect. So you're sleeping. I mean, we have to sleep. People say, well, that's spiritually sleeping. Well, I don't think so, because it says 10 of the 10, 5 did have oil, spiritual oil, the Holy Spirit in their lamps. They all slumbered and slept. Verse 6, and at midnight, again, that sense of unexpected. I don't expect people to show up at midnight, do you? I never had anybody show up at midnight. A cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming. Coming now. Not coming in 6 weeks or a year or 5 years. He's on his way right now. Go right now out to meet him. Remember, don't go down inside from the rooftop and to get your stuff. The bridegroom's coming quickly, unexpectedly, right now at midnight. Get up and go. Verse 7, then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. Verse 8, and the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves. Even that, buying and selling going on. The availability of oil in this parable is there. Even those little clues in these parables tell us that times might not be so weird, out of control, outrageous, disaster, things. Again, if you remember my outline, time of sorrows, then it's time to go. Most of the prophecies we read are of the great tribulation in a day of the Lord. It's too late by then, right? Unless you want to prefer to live through the great tribulation. And God will work with Christians, true Christians, that way too. I don't want to be there. I'd rather be in a place of safety. We all want to be in a place of safety. Verse 10, and while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready, there's the key, those who were ready, went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Verse 11, afterward, the other virgins came also saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. I count you with the hypocrites. Remember we read that? You just played Christian the whole time, and now you went into the wedding feast. What's that all about? Do you seriously think I'm going to let you in? You haven't done what I've told you to do. You've sat at church for 10 years, 5 years, 20 years, 40 years, playing Christianity. I don't know who you are. Verse 13, again, he reiterates this key. Watch, therefore, because I'm giving you this parable with all these lessons, watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. So always be ready. So always be ready. My seventh. Number six was the parable of the wise and foolish virgins. It's, again, labeled as a parable in the Bible. You know, man puts a lot of these titles in there, but it is a parable by all means, but it's also a prophetic parable. My point number seven, or prophecy number seven, is cares of this life. Cares of this life. And we can find this in Luke 21, verse 34. Luke 21, verse 34. But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing. The King James uses the word surfeiting, not like catching a wave, surfing, but surfeiting, which is the only place it's used, which means a headache from drunkenness. Kind of just that you're out of it. You know, I got this bad headache, I'm just out of it. Continuing, drunkenness, which means an intoxicant. It doesn't also have to mean alcohol. There's plenty of intoxicants in today's society. TV, is that an intoxicant? Does it numb the senses? Too much reading, the wrong stuff. Can that be an intoxicant? Can social events be an intoxicant? Yeah, I spend all my time just running around doing stuff. Anything can be an intoxicant. It doesn't mean alcohol specifically. Drunkenness, you get this headache, you're just out of it. You got this intoxicant that you're more focused on. And cares of this life. Cares of this life. Just average, everyday distractions. My job, my promotion, my car, my house, my school, my whatever. Just routine cares of this life. And that day come on you, what? Unexpectedly. There again, we find this word, unexpectedly, suddenly, virtually in all these places. Telling us, you can't sit there and watch your prophetic time clock, watch the events, and say, well, this has happened just like clockwork. Again, now if you're on top of your calling, and you're studying, praying, and reading, it won't be unexpected. We're still not going to know the exact days and times, and we will be ready. But for those who aren't doing what they know they should, it's going to be unexpected. Verse 35, for it will come, again, a prophetic promise, it will come as a snare. Another word that paints this picture. How does a snare work? You're walking along, bam, you get your foot caught in the snare. It's instantly. A snare doesn't, hey, you got a little blinking red light on it, big little siren going off, I'm a snare, here's a snare, here's a snare. Don't step on me. A snare is a snare because it happens quickly. Unexpectedly. For it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. The whole earth won't be expecting it. Verse 36, so what do you do? What do you do about that? Verse 36, watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all of these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. I thought that was interesting. Pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape. It's not that you pray, God, I pray that I'm worthy, I pray that I'm worthy, I pray that I'm worthy. It's watching and praying that makes you worthy. Watch, therefore, and pray always that you may be counted worthy. See the difference? It's praying and watching that will make us worthy. God will protect. He will let you know what's going on. You're not going to miss the boat or the plane or the train to the place of safety. So in summary, I want to actually turn to a passage in Luke 12, verse 35 to kind of summarize so many of these points, because Luke 12 really contains a lot of these same points in different text, but pointing out the same and even adding to these prophecies, these seven lessons I've gone through. Luke 12, verse 35. Luke 12, verse 35, let your waist be girded, which means be prepared. You gird your waist because you're ready. You're ready for battle. You're ready for an event or performing something. Let your waist be girded and your lamps burning. You know, it's burning now. It doesn't say keep your lamps off and light them when I tell you. Have your lamps burning, verse 36, and you yourselves be like men who wait for the master when he will return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, that they may open to him immediately. Again, we've already read those parables where the bridegroom returns unexpectedly at midnight, knocks, open quickly, open now. Verse 37, blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Assuredly, I say to you that he will gird himself and have them sit down to eat and will come and serve them. Verse 38, and if he should come in the second watch, unexpectedly, or come in the third watch, even more unexpectedly, and find them so, blessed are those servants. If you're ready, it won't matter, and you won't be fearful. If you are doing what you know you should be doing, there's simply nothing to worry about. You're God's precious child, son and daughter. He's going to make sure that things are okay for you. Verse 39, again, he gives a key. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have allowed the house to be broken into. Another key in verse 40. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour you do not expect. And then continuing in verse 41, he gives us really some strong warnings here. Verse 41. Then Peter said to him, Lord, do you speak this parable only to us or to all people? Peter asks, you know, it's a good question. Does this apply to everybody or is this about just us? Verse 42. And the Lord said, who then is that faithful and wise steward whom his master will make ruler over his household to give them their portion of food in due season? Verse 43 answers the question. Blessed is that servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. If you're doing, you're living as a Christian, you'll be blessed. Don't worry about it. Verse 44. Truly I say to you that he will make him ruler over all that he has. But if that servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming. Delaying his coming. And I can tell he's delaying his coming because everything seems just the way it is pretty much as it always has from the beginning of time. What makes the two different? What makes one eager and know it's coming? The other group, and nothing's happening. Because they're reading God's word. They're studying. They're praying. They're living God's truth. And they will get the clues. They'll get the signs. They'll get the picture. They'll get the prophetic picture. But if that servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, and begins to beat his male and female servants, and to eat and drink and be drunk. Verse 46, the master of that servant, not everyone, but the master of that servant will come on a day when he is not looking for him, and at an hour that he is not aware, and will cut him in two and appoint his portion with the unbelievers. Matthew said, again, the hypocrites. Verse 47, and that servant who knew his master's will, that's us, and did not prepare himself or do according to his will, which we know, shall be beaten with many stripes. Verse 48, but he who did not know, and there's people out in the world that have good intentions, mean well, but they just don't know God's truth. But he who did not know yet committed things deserving of stripes shall be beaten with few. If we're sitting here day after or week after week and we know what's right to do, what we should be doing, and we ignore those things, it says we're going to be beaten with many stripes. Is that going to be during the Great Tribulation? Maybe. But those who don't know or just out there in the world, it'll be easier for them. That's a pretty strong warning. Again, reading verse 48, but he who did not know yet committed things deserving of stripes shall be beaten with few. For everyone to whom much is given, that's us, from him much will be required. And to him much has been committed, that's us, of him they will ask the more. Again, this warning here is for us. It's really not for the world. If you look at today's world, just look up the news. If you're not reading the Good News magazine, which is now, you know, pulled in the World News and Prophecy, you're not watching. I mean, this past issue, I read normally at lunch. I'll read the whole thing. I mean, you don't want to talk about signs. If you're not reading the Good News magazine, which now includes, you know, World News and Prophecy, that used to be a separate, our separate publication, you're not watching, because the information in there it's exhaustive, it's thorough. It'll tell you what's going on. You need to supplement, of course, that reading with other things. But if you look at today's world and look at the five major prophetic players, to keep it very simple, to keep it just generic, because it's not my intention to be going into details of prophecy in world events, but to make a simple point, if you look at the five major players, you've got Israel, United States, England, which is a player in prophetic end time events. Of course, United States is in decline. Mr. Vernich mentioned that. We're pulling out of the Middle East as a military. We're cutting our military sharply. Of course, largest debtor nation on earth. The dollar value is declining. Political divide, political ineffectiveness. Social, moral decline. Of course, education system, which I agree begins, if not, I believe it's 80% in the family, 20% public people, other people. But still, it's declining. Aging infrastructure. You just look at the United States that was built, roads, bridges, the systems in place are declining. They're falling apart. Open borders, of course, were being, in one sense, diluted as a Israel nation. Obviously leads to an eventual collapse. But those things are happening now. I mean, if you can't see those signs of Israel, the Israel nations as a major player, those things are happening. King of the South is another major player in prophetic end times. If you think of the Arab Spring that's gone on this past year, for decades you had strong Arab leaders that were islands. They ruled with iron fist, and nothing goes on in their country without their permission, effectively. Well, a lot of that's been loosened up, and what's now taken over? Muslim Brotherhood, Egypt, some of the most powerful positions in parliament are being won by people that want to unite Muslims as one people. Well, that couldn't happen until recently. So King of the South as a player, those things are set in motion. They're happening as we speak. Europe, King of the North, the beast power, the 10 nations. We have 27 in the Eurozone. Well, what are they talking about? Breaking it down because you got all these inferior countries that are dragging us down with so much debt. I mean, Angela Merkel, all the leaders, France, Sarkozy, they're talking about those things. They've already had speeches and documents written saying, let's shed all these people and go to a core group. Guess how many there are? 10. I mean, those things are in motion. But, for those who aren't watching, it's just like another day, the Super Bowl, or these football games or schoolwork, whatever. Those things just come, and those other events are far off, and I'll worry about them when they happen. The false prophet, the Vatican, the Pope, they're calling publicly in documents, papers that they're writing, calling for one world system, calling for one central bank. They're calling for one moral social leader. This is recently, not just, some Pope, 10, 20, 30 years ago said this. They're calling for that. They want that. They're promoting that. They're one of the players. What about the East? Rumblings from the East, 200 million man army comes from the East because it sees its resources being threatened in the Middle East when the King of the North crushes, in essence, the King of the South. So the troops, 200 million man army comes from the East to stake their claim. What's that called? Armageddon? China's building their army, their military, at an incredible pace. It's all over the internet. Type in their military increase in China. You'll have 50 articles to look at. It's happening. But for those who aren't watching, it's just another day. I go to school, I do my thing, go to work, come home, watch TV. And these events aren't happening. And they will come unexpected. I've read or covered 12 pictures. I wasn't labeling as such. The fig tree, days of Noah, two in the field, two grinding, thief, returning master, faithful servant, pregnant woman, days of Lot, man on housetop, two in bed, returning bridegroom. All these examples, God's telling us these things are going to come like that. If we're waiting for big events, to finally get ready, it will come unexpectedly. The catastrophic fall of Israel, we're in a declining stage, of course, but that catastrophic fall comes quickly. Mr. Keller gave a sermon several years ago about that sudden collapse of Israel that comes in a 30-day period. Look that sermon up. It's an excellent sermon. These events will happen so quickly that we're not going to have time to get ready. I'm going to go get some oil. I'm going to go build my spirit quickly. Sorry. Building spirit, spiritual character takes years. Years that start now. If we're waiting for the big things to happen, we're going to miss the boat. The primary purpose of prophecy is to motivate us now. If we look at prophecy because I want to know when and what's going to happen and the events, the whole point of prophecy is to motivate you to do the right things. Look at the first few verses of the book of Revelation. And this is, Revelation of Christ through John. Blessed is he that does these things. That's what it says. What do you mean do Revelation? I thought Revelation was all these. I'm supposed to just learn the events. I'm sorry, you're not going to know enough about that anyhow. Blessed is he that does the book of Revelation, which is what? Put on white garments, get ready, be prepared, watch, pray, study. God wants obedience, faith, and love developed by choice, not under duress of climactic world events. We need to watch, pray, and be ready. And these seven prophecies for Christians will not be alarming.